You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Tsimikas. Minamino going towards the near post. It's the open shot time. And the Liverpool fans go balmy.
The Reds are one step away from a second cup final this season. Liverpool relentless and everything is still up for grabs. A scintillating FA Cup tie with Nottingham Forest settled by just one goal, and now Manchester City await at Wembley. If you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of our articles on Liverpool as well as everything else on the site. Go to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Right now it's a special price, £1 a month for 6 months, so head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. I'm Steve Hothersall. On the Red Agenda with me today, Kiva O'Neill and writer Chris McLaughlin. And we'll kick it off with the proper old school FA Cup scrap. Intensity and brilliant drama, Kiva.
Yeah, it was. It was difficult to watch at times, wasn't it? You know, Liverpool aren't used to getting pressed in that way by many teams. Nottingham Forest, you know, done a great job of that, just getting a man to every player. And Liverpool didn't look like they liked that at times. You know, they like a little bit of space as much as, you know, because they're the ones usually doing the hunting, but they were getting hunted down a bit, particularly in that first half. I thought Forest calmed down a little bit in the second half, but easily, you know, could have nicked that game 1-0. But as it happened, Liverpool have been grinding out results in recent weeks, and, you know, it was sort of a similar first half to the one we saw at the Emirates against Arsenal, where Liverpool, not at the best, but not at the worst at the same time, and just sort of getting through parts of games that are, you know, maybe not going their way, which I think, you know, bodes very well considering, you know, what happened when you look back at maybe the Chelsea game where, you know, they went 2-0 up and then it's all sort of come crashing down quite quickly. The team seemed to have maybe learned a lesson from that game and just probably now, you know, with their eyes on every trophy still, seem to be able to, you know, dig in and get the results. Obviously, the four changes, I think, sort of helped just energise the team a little bit. And you always thought the quality would be too much for Nottingham Forest, and it proved to be in the end with Diogo Jota's 19th goal of the season.
Yeah, 12 minutes from time, Diogo Jota comes to the rescue. Liverpool's number 20 doing the business again. He didn't have the best of games, but sometimes that is a theme with him, Chris.
You don't always have to have the best of games when you come up and score winners in semi-finals. I mean, you know, he sent us to Wembley at Arsenal in the League Cup. He sent us to Wembley for the semi-final and Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. I mean, what are the chances he's going to send us to a semi-final against Benfica in the Champions League? He's a bit of an old-school goal scorer on the sly. I don't feel like we thought that was what we were getting when he first came from Wolves. Probably played more in wide positions there, and certainly when he first came to Liverpool, he was sort of seen as, well, the guy who comes in to give Salah a rest or give Mane a rest or Firmino. And now, if you had to put your best Liverpool 11 down for a cup final, he's up front. He's in the middle and he gets goals. And, you know, it was a difficult finish from Tsimikas' cross. It was hard to tell whether it was onside or not in real time. Mm. The angle that the television showed made it look like he was offside. The VAR angle made him look onside. But either way, he was alert enough to just pull off, call back at the far post, stretch his leg out, put it into the net, send the travelling cock wild, and we're all off back down to Wembley again.
Yeah, fine finish in the end. You mentioned the four subs, and really interesting, Kiva, that whilst Jürgen makes those four subs and Jota isn't having a great game, he still completely believes in him and leaves him on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that switch sort of Firmino dropped a bit deeper then, didn't he? And did Jota come across a little bit more? I mean, you can't really hold him down. He's another one of those players where it feels like Luis Diaz has come to Liverpool and is a bit the same. You kind of don't know where the position is at times because they're just floating everywhere. They're just, you know, trying to sniff out those opportunities and chances. Jota just popped up out of nowhere for his goal, and, you know, to get the slightest of toe pokes on it to get it in was just, you know, incredible. And I think, you know, he, like you mentioned, Steve, he didn't have the best game, but he's there for those moments, those big moments. And it's great that Liverpool have another one of those big game players, because as Chris said, you know, there's massive games on the horizon. I'm sure he'll be eyeing the Benfica one with, you know, being Portuguese and having that sort of, you know, that rivalry and that, like, wanting to go there and do the business. And I'm sure he will. And we might be looking, like Chris mentioned, we might be looking back at this season and thinking, you know, Diogo Jota is the player to put Liverpool into semi-finals, into finals. You know, he might be the player that we look back on in 10 years' time and think, wow, if Liverpool didn't have him, would that have happened? And obviously, as you mentioned, they're eyeing a quadruple, which is, you know, bizarre and amazing all at the same time, to even just be able to say that word, because it's usually Man City at this time of the season, isn't it, saying it? But obviously it's Liverpool fans now, so, you know, he's just been a massive signing for Liverpool. And you think if he hadn't had that injury last season, how many more goals he probably would have had, because that kept him out for about, was it 4 months in the end? But obviously, you know, he's touched lucky this season and been fifth for most of it. And yeah, just first on the team sheet, one of them, definitely. And wherever you want to put him, he'll just play with that same enthusiasm and just class, to be honest.
Already carving himself out a big piece of history, big slice of history, isn't he, Chris, with the stuff he's doing, Diogo Jota?
He is, and, you know, and that's what a player wants to do when they come to Liverpool. They don't want to be a bit part player. They want to come in and make a name for themselves. And I think I'm right in saying that was his 19th goal of the season yesterday. I think it's the best total of his career, if I remember right from the stats I saw. It takes some doing that when you've got to share a picture of Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, and you've got Bobby Firmino, and you've now got Luis Diaz competing for a place with you. You know, Liverpool have relied on Salah and Mane to get the goals for a number of years. Firmino has contributed as well. But now there's a fourth guy who's one goal short of 20 goals a season going into April. And he's not even seen as the main man when you've got Mo Salah. So it's quite incredible, really. It'd be a bit like in 1984 when Ian Rush scored all those goals. If Kenny, not just Kenny, had got 20, but if Michael Robinson had got 20 as well. Do you know what I mean? And that didn't happen. So we're living in an era where we've got attacking options like never before who all contribute goals. And I think you've got to remember as well yesterday that Kostas Tsimikas deserves a huge amount of credit, because as does Joe Gomez, because Liverpool went into that game without the two main assist makers in the team. Three if you include Mo Salah. And one of the guys who's come in, Tsimikas, took his chance again. Supplied the ball for Jota to score, and that's another big contribution from him to help Liverpool in this quest for the mythical, magical quadruple that nobody's ever quite achieved. But, you know, we've gone into April with a chance of it for the first time, so you've got to start dreaming now, haven't you?
I know you're a betting man, Chris. I think it was something like 150-1 a few months ago. I think it's 20-1 now, isn't it? So even the bookies are running a little bit scared here.
Well, look, at 20-1 they are. I mean, it's never happened, and for it to happen, Man City need to win nothing. It's hard to bet on. I don't know what price Man City would be to win nothing. But Guardiola usually gets a trophy, you know, pretty much every season, bar one, I think, in his managerial career. He's come out of it with a trophy. So you couldn't really bet against City winning something. But at the same time, you know, if Liverpool beat them in the FA Cup semi-final, go to the Etihad and win the league game there, then potentially he's relying on winning the Champions League, which Man City have never done, to get a trophy himself. So the possibilities here are endless of what could happen.
Chris has been doing his permutations already. We'll get more on the quadruple a little bit later on. You mentioned Joe Gomez there. I love it when Joe Gomez does well. He seems like he's been at the club forever. Kiva, sometimes people have questioned, you know, is it coming to the end of the line for him? He's still 24. He played right back. And he was absolutely spot on. And it shows why, you know, Jurgen trusts him. And actually, there's plenty more to come from him as well.
Yeah, I think he's showing so much as well, isn't he? That he is just, you know, on the sort of edge of this squad and not starting at centre-back where he obviously wants to. You know, he's coming at right-back again for another game. And he looks bright, he looks strong, which I think is the main take from watching him against Nottingham Forest. He looks, you know, defensively, he is so good, And I think, you know, maybe attacking and his crosses aren't as good as Trent Alexander-Arnold. But then, I mean, in world football on the right and in world football anyway, who can compare to the delivery Trent Alexander-Arnold has? So it's a difficult job for any player to come in and play it right back because you're filling in for one of the world's best. But for Joe Gomez to do it when he hasn't been playing much football and he, you know, he performed well, I think, it, you know, hats off to him. And it has been a difficult season for him. Obviously, you know, Liverpool signed Konate and he's played a lot of football. Joel Matip is having the season of his life. He's, you know, one of Liverpool's best players. So it has been, you know, everything's kind of gone against him in a way, even though he is fit, you know, he's ready to play. And obviously he showed that at Forest, but it has been difficult for him coming back from that injury. It's took him probably a little bit longer, and you know, he will be eyeing to play alongside Van Dijk as he did for a lot of games, and you know, he shone in a lot of those games too, in the same way Matip is shining now and Konate is when he's coming in. So, you know, Liverpool still very much have a great option in Joe Gomez. And I think, you know, if an injury was to occur tomorrow, or you know, a couple to the defence, and it was Joe Gomez and someone else, you would back him because he is such a, you know, an integral part of this Liverpool team and has been for such a long time. And when you do mention how young he is as a player, he's just such a good option to have. Obviously, you feel a little bit sorry for him in a way that he isn't getting that game time, but then it's just so difficult, isn't it? But he'd be working hard, and I think Klopp will like that he's just, you know, happy to play it right back. Obviously, you know, deep down he might be thinking, I'd rather play over there, but he's acting like a professional, and that's, you know, the kind of thing you need to do to sort of work your way back to, you know, being first choice alongside Van Dijk, which is no mean feat, as we know, because Matip and Konate would probably walk into the majority of Premier League sides, and Joe Gomez, would he not, you know, when he's at his very best?
There's plenty more to come from him. Of course, filling in for Trent, who misses a couple of weeks with a hamstring strain. We don't know how bad that is, Chris, but it seems quite timely as well, doesn't it? If you're going to miss any period, miss this England international break, probably wasn't needed for that FA Cup game. It might be a rest that actually pays dividends a little bit later on.
It makes a refreshing change, doesn't it, that we've got a player injured before the international break rather than during it. I mean, normally we're all sat here on tenterhooks watching Liverpool players play for other countries, and every time they go down or, you know, feel the back of the leg or something like that, we're all thinking, oh God, not again. I mean, Joe Gomez is a good example of what happened to him last season, being away on international duty, and it seems like it's gone on forever. You know, I remember Jamie Redknapp seeming to get injured every time he went away with England back in the day, and it kind of feels like in the Klopp era that's happened a lot. It even happened to Trent at the end of last season, didn't it, when he was playing for England in that friendly up at Middlesbrough before the international tournament in the summer. But without Trent, Liverpool aren't as good. I think that's got to be made clear. Joe Gomez is a really good deputy at right back. And James Milner comes into it as well. But when you look at what Trent contributes, as Cuiva said, in terms of his assists and being the best in his position in world football, then there is nobody like him. And I think if he's out for a sustained period, particularly when we've got to go to Manchester City and we've got to Champions League quarterfinals and we've got to play them in the FA Cup semi-final, it'd be a massive loss. Gomez can come in and do a good job. He played really well yesterday. It can't be easy having to come in at right back and try and replace Trent in such a way when so much of Liverpool's play is geared towards the fullbacks and them creating chances, when that's not necessarily his natural game. You know, he's never scored a goal for Liverpool, Gomez as well. And let's not forget, Trent takes free kicks and set pieces, whereas you don't see Joe Gomez taking a corner when he comes in to replace him. So I think it would be difficult if Trent is out for any length of time. Hopefully it's not too serious. The club have been quite cagey in terms of what we know. Just the manager saying, well, it's weeks. When we've got Watford, the first game back, will he be back for that? No, nobody seems to know as of yet. But I would really, really want him back in that team for when Liverpool go to the Etihad.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely pivotal, isn't he? Let's get to a couple more points from the Forest game. There was a chance for Bobby Firmino, wasn't there? He probably had too much time to dwell on his opportunity, Kiva, and in the end tried to chip the keeper. Didn't work.
I know, what was he doing? He just needed to do it and do it quickly. But he sort of like took a little moment to sort of assess his options. I think he probably could have played through Jota, looking back at it. But obviously things happen quite quickly, and watching them on a slow motion replay is a lot easier to see that. Bobby Firmino is definitely a player who could see that. He probably just thought, you know, I've got the number 9 on my back, I want to score. I've started, I'm the striker, I'm going to score. and he didn't. But, you know, hats off to the Forest keeper. He got up well and, you know, stayed up for as long as he could and, you know, managed to get a little bit of a nick on it. And then, you know, there's Firmino again, just jumping up to try and head it, because that's exactly who he is. You know, I think he played really well yesterday and does so much off the ball. Like, we probably don't talk about this enough, but it, like, there was so many moments Liverpool won the ball back because of his press and motion, just, you know, sort of cutting off alleyways a little bit and, you know, being there, and then, you know, Liverpool would win the ball back, and he's done that so much for Liverpool, and it's such a massive thing that I think can go unnoticed a little bit at times. But he's a player who's fast approaching 100 goals for Liverpool. I think he's on about 96 now, so, you know, would have been nice for him to get that one and get ever closer to, you know, joining an illustrious club of players. Because obviously, you know, we speak before about Jota about to score 20 goals and how incredible it is to have so many goal scorers at the club. And Firmino's been obviously at the club longer than any of them up front, but he scored nearing 100 goals. Hasn't always been his thing to score goals, which is, you know, crazy, and probably, you know, people wouldn't understand that if you'd never watched Liverpool before and you're seeing, you know, the centre forward wearing the number 9. Should be scoring a hat-trick a game, shouldn't he, in this team? But obviously we know what he does. He drops into space, he drops out of space, he's, you know, passing the ball, moving it about, and, you know, letting Salah and Mane and whoever else drop into it. So, you know, he will get that 100 goals soon, but, you know, he could have got closer with that chance, definitely. I don't know what he was thinking, but he'll be there again to do something, probably a no-look hat-trick.
We should give Forrest some credit. Incredible, really. I mean, Johnson shone on the night as well. They had a massive opportunity just before Liverpool scored, Chris.
They did, but it was the only real brilliant opportunity, I thought. I mean, I know it's a pulsating atmosphere, and Forrest probably played above themselves in terms of the level of fitness and performance that Steve Cooper's men put in over the 90 minutes. But you look at the stats, it was only Yates' header right at the end that Alisson saved was their only effort on target. Now, obviously, when Zinka and Nagel goes through, he's got a great chance, put it wide of the goal. Did Alisson have it covered with the dive? And you look at the replays, maybe he would have saved if it was on target. His positioning was good. But other than that, and the sort of penalty claim they had, that was never a penalty in a million years. He tried to obviously drag his foot over the goalkeeper to get it, but did it too early, and clearly and thankfully, well, the referee didn't seem to give anything at the time, did he? He kind of just like stood there and let him get himself surrounded by the Forest players and wait until VAR had a word in his ear. Didn't really seem to indicate what he'd given, but it was never a penalty. And I thought Liverpool defensively actually dealt with the threat from the home team pretty well. I mean, what did they have, about 2 corners maybe at the most? Didn't really seem to threaten from set pieces. And just that one header at the end when they're pushing extra men forward was their only real chance on goal. That said, they made Liverpool work really hard. I mean, let's be honest, a 1-0 win away at a Championship team's not seen as necessarily as a good result on paper if you just, you know, you switched on your computer, you looked at the final scores. Liverpool have only won 1-0 against a Championship club. But when you saw the energy they had from the crowd, and, you know, the crowd were good, you could tell it was a big game for them. You know, maybe the biggest game since they got relegated in the 90s, I don't know, but it kind of felt like that from the atmosphere. Jürgen described it as like a European night, which I guess it was for them. I mean, obviously, they're a club steeped in European history. I mean, you know, as a Liverpool fan, I wish they weren't, because it was them who sort of ended our little run of trying to win 3 European Cups in a row in the 70s when they were major rivals. And I grew up in the 80s, and that is the first time I have ever seen Liverpool win at the City Ground. The last one was 84, and I'm not quite old enough to remember that one. I think we played there something like 12 times since and not won. I used to dread Liverpool. Going there when I was younger, thinking I'd take a draw every time, it almost felt a bit like that would come back round full circle during the game, because, you know, I wasn't confident at any stage that Liverpool were definitely going to win. You know, I always felt we had a goal in us, but Forrest also on the counter-attack, and if they could get through that defensive line just once and maybe take a chance and nick a 1-0, it could have gone either way, like Cuever said earlier. And the Forrest players and Steve Cooper do deserve credit, because he's took that club from being relegation candidates, you know, earlier in the season, to a team who look a good bet for promotion now through the playoffs. You know, if they've got that crowd behind them and that team playing like that and a few more players to come back in, they've got to have a right chance of coming back to the Premier League, which is, let's be honest, it's where a club like Nottingham Forest belong.
It did look like a ferocious crowd. James has written on the Athletic today about how two players had different opportunities. One took it in terms of Joe Gomez, but maybe Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain isn't grasping his opportunity at the moment, Kiva. What did you make of his involvement and performance?
I think there was one moment, wasn't there, where he sort of got the ball and ran into the box and showed a glimpse of who he is as a player. And that's, you know, an attacking midfielder, picking the ball up and just running at players and having that confidence to take it past, to have shots from, you know, we know how much he loves the shots from outside the box. Didn't think he played too badly, but, you know, he didn't play probably to the best of his ability. But that's sort of been the story for him since that big injury in, what was it, April 2018. He just hasn't, you know, unfortunately for him, looked to be the player that he was before that, because he was one of Liverpool's best players. When you look back at, you know, that run to the Champions League final, the run in the league that season, he was, you know, an unbelievable player. He felt unstoppable at times when he had the ball and was, you know, running forward. But he's come back from, you know, what was such a serious injury and never quite looked the same. You know, he has in spells and instances, but I don't think he's ever sort of been able to come back truly from that in a way, as, you know, Liverpool have got so many talented midfielders and getting into that side is difficult. He had his place and then it sort of went, obviously, with his injury. He comes back, tries to get in, but obviously there's just so many talented midfielders there and so many players that'll, you know, play games ahead of him. But he's definitely still, I think, a decent option to have, you know, even off the bench and just in the squad. He just seems like a nice guy as well, which is, you know, always, I think, a nice thing. But yeah, he didn't quite play to his best yesterday, and whether we'll see his best towards the end of the season, who knows. He loves a goal, doesn't he? And I think he scored some exciting ones against City in that season, didn't he? So, you know, fingers crossed he could be the man to pop up with a moment of, you know, that makes Liverpool history, and who'd want to deny him that, because he is such a talented footballer, but one who's, you know, had a sort of rocky road coming back from that injury, but certainly someone that I think a lot of Premier League clubs would definitely, you know, want in their side. And if he was playing for any other team, you'd almost be worried about him coming off the bench, wouldn't you, against Liverpool? So, or even just starting against Liverpool. So I think, you know, you have to sometimes look at it that way and think, you know, what would he give other teams? And I think he does give that to Liverpool. But as I say, you know, there's just a plethora of talent there, and it's been difficult for him.
Amazing to think that Liverpool haven't been to an FA Cup semi-final since, what, 2015, so defeat to Aston Villa. This is the furthest, Chris, that Jürgen's ever been in the competition. I suppose fingers have been pointed recently saying that perhaps he was disrespecting the competition.
I think that's unfair, to be honest. I think it's more to do with the quality of the squad. Jürgen's big, as we know, Jürgen's big on sort of the intensity of games and player fitness. He's the leading manager calling for the five substitute rule to be brought in the Premier League, for instance, like it is in other European countries. I think he, in previous years, he looks at the squad as well. If they're good enough to be in the Liverpool squad, they're good enough to be in the team, and I need them to be in the team. Now, results haven't necessarily proved that. Obviously, we've had a few difficult draws. Chelsea away, for instance. Wolves away wasn't easy in the third round a few years back. But I don't personally feel like he's disrespected the competition. I just feel now he can go into it and make changes where there's better players. And you know, like I touched on earlier, yesterday we went in without Mane and Salah. We went in without Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. We had Henderson and Thiago on the bench. And we still put up a good performance and then had quality to come on. We had Luis Diaz to come on, Minamino to come on. I mean, Minamino's run for the goal actually distracts Colback and gives Jota the space at the far post momentarily. If you look at that replay again, it was an intelligent run across the front man to open up the space for Jota. So little things like that can, little details like Rafa Benitez used to say back in the day, small details win games. And something as simple as being able to bring Jordan Henderson on to win the ball, pass it out to a quality left-back alternative to Andy Robertson, cross it into a 20-goal-a-season striker who we all thought was going to be fourth choice, and he's got space thanks to the fifth or sixth choice striker making a clever run at the near post. Now, you go back 3 or 4 years in the FA Cup, we didn't have those players. You know, no disrespect to some of the players who came in, some of the younger players who got opportunities, but they weren't at the same level. And I personally think that's not only been the difference in the FA Cup, but the League Cup as well this season. You know, Liverpool have won the Carabao Cup, having not won that for, you know, too long as well, let's be honest. But he had the option to bring in better players for it and still give some quality kids like Tyler Morton, for instance, an opportunity in the competition. And I purely think, whereas, say, Man City and Chelsea have dominated those two competitions in recent years, they've had the squads to do it, and now Liverpool do have the squad to do it. And he's effectively doing the same thing, changing his team in the League Cup and FA Cup. He's just got better players to bring in.
This is a season that could end with one trophy, Kiva. It could end with four trophies. That's undetermined. What's undeniable is Liverpool being in four competitions until the end of March, while actually winning one and being in three more. The club's never seen this before.
Just so exciting, isn't it? Such an exciting time to be watching this Liverpool team, even though, you know, the last couple of games you watched them and you kind of knew they would do a break a little bit and, you know, like I said, mentioned earlier, sort of grinding out results. And it's kind of that part of the season now, isn't it, where, you know, every game sort of will define history. And if you look at that April, starting with Watford and going right to the end, you know, it's just massive for Liverpool. It's so huge to think any slip up in any of those games, and it's kind of, you know, one or two trophies have gone. The Premier League, you lose one game, you're pretty much out of it. Obviously, you know, what happens against Benfica in those two legs will define how far Liverpool go in pursuit of a seventh European Cup. And then obviously playing Man City at Wembley for, you know, a place in the final of the FA Cup, to potentially then go and play probably Chelsea, but maybe Crystal Palace in the final. You know, you're kind of trying to, like Chris, when you mentioned, or Chris before, working out the permutations. That's all we're doing, aren't we? We're all on our phones, scrolling down the fixture list, looking at the table, looking at this, thinking, well, how many points, well, that, we've got that game, and doing all this counting and arithmetic to sort of figure out, will Liverpool win the quadruple? And, you know, it's all boding quite well so far. They've got that League Cup there, so whatever happens, you know, Liverpool have won a trophy this season, no matter what. But is that the trophy they want? No, it's obviously the Premier League title. An FA Cup would be great. And of course, you know, we know Liverpool's great history in Europe. They want another Champions League. And it feels like Chris was talking about there, the squad depth is there now. We've been chatting about this for, I think, since Luis Diaz came in. It kind of sort of, everyone was like, oh yeah, this team's pretty strong now. I felt like he was almost like the missing puzzle piece to go, you know, well, there's another really strong attacking player who's just, you know, slotted in seamlessly. A lack of injuries as well. You know, Alexander-Arnold's out at the minute, but fingers crossed he can get back pretty soon. We've kind of been speaking about the injuries of last season a lot for the start of the season, but this season has been, you know, touch wood, pretty good for Liverpool. And when players have been out, you know, other players have stepped up. So I think it's about now just keeping that fitness and going after every game as though it is a final, because at the start of the season, Liverpool fans always say, don't they, oh, only 30-odd cup finals to go in the league, and now there's less than that, and it does feel like silverware is close to Liverpool. And I hope that, you know, come the end of this season, we're all talking and writing and thinking and just enjoying what a special team this is. Maybe the best Liverpool team ever, if they go on to do what we're all dreaming.
You've just outlined April, and if you go through the fixtures, Chris, has there ever been a more insane month for fixtures? City twice, a derby, United, quarterfinals of the European Cup. It looks the maddest month I think I've ever seen.
The short answer is no, isn't it? it really is the maddest month. I mean, we've got Man United and Everton at home and Anfield in the same week, and you can't even think that far ahead. It doesn't even feel like they're the biggest games at the moment, because we've got to go to Man City first. And what happens? Well, we've got to beat Watford first. I mean, let's be honest, a 12:30 kickoff straight after an international break is probably the worst slot you can have when your players are only just coming back from over the world on a Thursday night or whatever. So, you know, you can't take anything for granted at this point of the season. Roy Hodgson's done a number on Liverpool before in the past, and, you know, Watford are fighting for their lives, so we can't take that for granted. Benfica, we've got to remember what happened when Rafa was here, when we were European champions, and everybody thought that was a good draw, and we lost home and away to them. Deservedly so, they beat us fair and square over the two legs. It looks the best draw on paper, let's be honest, given, you know, the Portuguese league's not as strong as some of the other teams we could have faced. But you can't take it for granted. They'll be massively up for it.
But they're not having a great season, are they?
They're not having a great season, no. They're third in the league. They're not as good as Porto. And given what Liverpool have done against Porto, you'd obviously fancy Liverpool. But you're going into it in such a hectic schedule that you're not necessarily playing your strongest team in all these games. You're relying on the squad, and sometimes you just don't know what happens in certain games in European football. So I don't think we can take it for granted. Also, because right slap bang in the middle of those two games is Man City away in the Premier League. And by the time we've just got over that and whatever happens at the Etihad, and we're all sort of like taking in what that means in the Premier League, we've got to go and play them again at Wembley in the FA Cup semi-final. And if you think about the comparative highs and lows we could be on after the FA Cup semi-final, you know, we could have lost at Man City, gone out of the Champions League, lose the FA Cup semi-final, and it's like, oh my God, the season's fallen in. We could go and win at Man City, knock Benfica out, knock Man City out of the FA Cup. And we're sat here thinking, oh my God, we've got Man United and Everton next, and everything's on. It's mind-boggling how it could actually go. And I don't know, it's because we've not been in this situation before in terms of it being the Champions League and the Premier League, and one cup already, won on the FA Cup. It's kind of weird to get your sort of emotions in check and not let yourself get carried away about what might happen, but how you'd feel if it didn't happen. Because, you know, if Liverpool only finished this season now with the League Cup, it's going to somehow feel like a disappointment in a weird way, because we're going to April in contention for everything. Yet at the same time, like we've said, this has been an amazing season. And I think a phrase Jürgen used, I think it was at the start of the season in his programme notes, he described Liverpool fans as journey hunters. That it's all about the journey when you're supporting Liverpool. And obviously you want to get to that destination where you're winning trophies. But at the same time, and our fans are enjoying this. And look, you know, the away end yesterday, they had a great time at the City Ground. And now they're going into April looking forward to a trip to Lisbon, a trip to Wembley, trip to Manchester, which, I mean, all right, nobody looks forward to a trip to Manchester, but they're going to Manchester, and then you've got the two big home game against Man United and Everton as well. It's insane, really, Steve.
Given, Kevin, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, I think, for a quadruple, how disappointed would you be if it doesn't work out the way that you've imagined it to work out? I think Chris has just alluded to it then, hasn't he? The two ends of the emotional scale here.
It's difficult to sort of think, isn't it? But, you know, if Liverpool don't win another trophy this season, then that'll just be not good enough. I think fans will be absolutely gutted to think, you know, this team, and like he says, this journey that the fans have been on this season has been, you know, incredible to come. What was it, 14 points from behind to go within 1 point of Man City is just remarkable, really. And I think to end the season with just that League Cup, I don't think it'll be good enough right now, because, you know, this team and how they're playing and, you know, just the feeling around the fan base and everything Jürgen Klopp's built. It's almost like we thought he built the best Liverpool team, but then he's almost rebuilt it quietly. And, you know, now it's the best Liverpool team. And we're talking about this Liverpool team versus the team of, you know, 2019, 2020, which is bizarre, really, because that was not long ago. It feels like yesterday. In reality, if you think about it, Liverpool need to win another trophy, no matter what. Now, I think, you know, if it's not the Champions League and it's not the Premier League and Liverpool end up, you know, with a cup double winning the FA Cup, I think fans won't be disgruntled with that, because, you know, you've bossed it in both the domestic cups, and Liverpool haven't done that in such a long time. But obviously the league is the one I feel like fans want more than anything, you know, to get to the 20th title and obviously draw level with Man United is something, you know, Liverpool fans watched as United ticked ever closer to 18 and past that, while, you know, Liverpool were nowhere near winning one, and then, you know, now they've got 19, I think 20 would be massive. But then the Champions League is just such a special competition. The European Cup is Liverpool, isn't it? And, you know, to get to two finals already under Jürgen Klopp, who would rule out a third? So it's kind of like we're all being a bit greedy here, but you want to win them all, don't you, really? But I think winning one of them is massive for Liverpool. They have to win one of them, and be that the FA Cup, then be it that, and, you know, we'll all have to sort of get over the hangover again of not winning the Premier League title by about a point, probably, to Man City. But, you know, the way it's going at the minute, I just think the momentum and something's changed in this Liverpool team. They've hunted Man City down, they can feel it. Everything's on that City game. But then, as Chris mentioned, you know, it was the Everton and United are up next after that. And obviously, in the season, Liverpool did miss out by a point. They drew to Everton and United towards the end of the season. And that kind of, you know, they fluffed the lines there, because that was, you know, those were the points that would have took them past Man City. So, you know, it's not just that City game. Every game's important now. feel like we just have to enjoy this because, like you say, might not come around again. Liverpool could get knocked out of the League Cup in the first time of asking next season. The FA Cup, they might, you know, get to a quarter final and get knocked out. So we're in this special place. They've won a trophy. They're eyeing three more. So you just have to go with it. And I think take this international break to just breathe, watch the lads. Hopefully none of them get injured and, you know, just get all of us get ready, I think, emotionally for what's going to be just such an exciting and, you know, heart racing time.
Knowing Chris, he's probably done a Venn diagram on all this, on how it's going to work itself out. Another celebration might well be Liverpool women. It looks that way anyway, and we shouldn't forget this amidst all the success that the men's team is having. What is the permutation for them now, Kiva?
Yeah, well, they drew yesterday to Charlton after beating Charlton last week 1-0 away. It was goalless draw at Prenton Park, which I think Matt Beard and his side will be disappointed because, you know, three more points would have got them ever closer. I think they're 8 points ahead of Bristol. Bristol have got a game in hand. There's four games left for Liverpool to play. They'll play Durham on Sunday, I think, at Prenton Park. So get down and support the girls if you can because, you know, they're about to do something special and get out of the Championship, which they didn't do last season. And it's such a difficult league. There's only one promotion place and that's for the winners. You know, only one team gets out alive. So, you know, Liverpool are looking to be that team, but then they'll play Bristol at Ashton Gate, Bristol City, the week after, and Bristol are the closest team to them. So I think that'll be sort of the title decider, and I think that's on April 3rd. So if Liverpool can, you know, defeat Durham, who are a great team, and then see how Bristol get on at the weekend as well, and then they could potentially win at Bristol, probably. But, you know, my maths are all just all over the place at the minute with all of the Liverpool teams. My head's gone. But, yeah, no, an exciting time. And hopefully they can do it, you know, as well as the men do what they can do and win into the silverware. And it'll be just an all-round good feeling to have reported on such a special season for the women and the men. Fingers crossed. They're nearly there now. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting.
It's not far, is it? Finishing line's close. Brilliant pod. Thanks so much for the company, Chris McLaughlin and Kiva, as always. And James's piece on that FA Cup game, the win over Nottingham Forest, is on The Athletic right now. Thank you for listening to The Red Agenda. We're back very soon.